Adam Lafondra places it into that bottom corner, and the Cove celebrates.
Here's Callum Newhart.
A point is a point, but was it a point well made? Sky Blue Stories here to talk you through the Sydney Derby, round one of the A-League Men's, as well as talk through Indigenous Football Week with a special guest. We'll also preview an FFA Cup game coming very shortly after this podcast is released, as well as MacArthur for Sydney FC Men's first home game of the season at Cogra Jubilee. We'll round out the pod tonight by hearing from another industry expert in Stephanie Brantz, who's going to tell us a little bit about her thoughts on the Sydney FC A-League Women's squad later in the pod. But for now, it's a very warm welcome to Sean Maloney. Sean, how are you, mate?
Hey, Jono. Good to be back again. Another week, one down, another 25 glorious rounds to go. Yeah.
And finals.
And finals, of course. And finals. Two, if three weeks, the finals, hopefully.
Just before we get into it, give the listeners, where's your mood at? Where's your mood at after the football on the weekend?
Positive. And I'm normally a bit of a negative Nancy. Mm. But I'm quite we'll get into nitty gritty of it.
Okay.
I'm very good. Content.
Good. Oh, that's good. I just wanted to set the tone. Little less conversation from you. Thanks very much. We've got to thank our sponsor tonight, Arrow Sport. Arrow Sport have provided our patrons and some special guests with some Sky Blue Stories stubby holders or can holders, can coolers, if you like. And they continue to sponsor some fan media across the A-Leagues. So thanks very much once again to Arrow Sport. Thanks to our patrons who continue to support us financially through there. And a big thanks to Charlie Blackman, which I think is a pseudonym, but I won't reveal his true identity from the forum, who decided to give us a one-off payment this week with 12 months worth of subscription dollars. So that was fantastic. Thanks once again. Sean, let's dive straight in. We'll do a little bit of around the grounds and club news before we get into the big dissection of that 0-0 draw at CommBank Stadium on the weekend.
Yeah, let's smash through these around the grounds. Big congratulations, Remy, Charlie and Jessica Nash, making the Matildas squad selection up against the Monarchs USA. Two game friendly.
It is, yeah.
Worth it against the women's team. We had Paige Satchel making the New Zealand team, and I know Michelle Morris TV, she'll be ecstatic about it. Back into the Chilean. Muy bien.
She is. Fantastic to see, again, Sky Blues represented quite strongly on the international stage there, Sean. We obviously haven't seen Jess pull on the Sky Blue jersey just yet, Jessica Nash, but For her to make that extended Matilda squad's fantastic. And Charlie Rule as well was a little bit of a surprise.
My ignorance. I'm not bagging out anybody here, but I was a little bit surprised that Jess hasn't pulled on a shirt for us, and Charlie maybe got 120 minutes worth of football last season. Mm. It'll take a little. They're making Matilda's selection. Maybe position-wise... Or they
versatility, maybe.
Or what's his name wants to just get them into the team as youngsters and just sees them as the next Mary Fowler or Kyra Cooney Cross, years to come. But I thought maybe Princess, Mackenzie,
Courtney,
Charlotte, Courtney, of course, might have had a couple of noses in front.
100. Yeah, I tend to agree there. But I think like you said, I think Charlie and Jess both have spent times in the young Matildas and future Matildas setups over the years. And but they've done fantastically well to get in front of Tony Gustafson, obviously. So fantastic news for them. And a couple of people online, sort of having a bit of a go about, ways to get selected for the Matildas, play football in Sydney. Like, but it's always great to see. Great to see. Another quick mention on some of those squads, Sean, former Sky Blue and Sky Blue Stories first ever guest, Sophia Huerta, has back in the US women's team, which is fantastic.
She'll be back down under.
She is. I think I saw her actually already. She's already here. So she's posting pictures of Sydney Harbour. And yeah, wonderful to see. Wonderful to see one of our old favourites back back in the country and hopefully on the pitch on the weekend.
Well, let me jump ahead a little bit, Jono, as we're talking about the women's game at the moment. Devastating. Devastating. Like, fuck me dead. Poor Ellie Brush. Can she? I feel for her. Like, you feel for anybody regardless of the injury, but ACL.
Yeah.
Again.
Setback.
Before the start of the season. I just, you know, I'm lost for words.
Yeah, heartbreaking news through the week that Ellie will not be taking part for the A-League Women's this season. Obviously, yeah, like I said, Sean, a bit of an injury setback on her road to recovery. So that's going to hurt, not just her, but the squad and the team and morale. But good news is that she's sticking around in a bit of an assistant manager sort of mentoring role by the looks of it.
Yeah, I wonder if Ante now will be quick to move and maybe look to see if they could fill that defensive spot that Ellie's now vacated.
It'll be interesting because I think we knew that Ellie wasn't going to be around for probably the first half of the season anyway, like still with that recovery. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he looks to add some youth or add some backup there. But we'll soon see.
Well, speaking of signing or whatnot, Jono, you can speak more to this, but we've got Liam McGing who's joined us. He was trialing with us guys over the last fortnight. Game one, he's made his way onto the bench. Forced selection by Stevie. He must have been trialing the house down.
Yeah.
I dare say we've signed Liam A as cover, but B, we've got Anton over at Brisbane at the moment till what, end of the year, start of the new year?
Yeah, they didn't specify, which was interesting. But yeah, like, there's a bit of a scoop we sort of picked up from looking at pictures of that trial game, Sean, like you said. But Liam McGing, for those unaware, spent, you know, 3 or 4 years with the Sydney FC youth setup, making, you know, many, many appearances over the years from 2016 to 2019. He then got his actual chance in the A-League with Wellington and made some appearances there. Again, was sort of a bit of a depth signing for them with Ulfi Talle, who'd obviously seen him, you know, work in the Sydney system. So, yeah, it's he obviously signed for depth with no news still about the length of Donaghy's injury. You know, I dare say that this is a bit of an injury replacement, short-term one to see maybe how long that does last. But, I mean, the most important thing to know about Liam is that he's the younger, better-looking and better player than his brother Jake. So that's the main thing you need to know.
Moving on, we've had, you know, we should have known this already for about a week now, but we've had some change of fixtures, a few changes that have happened, a few moans and groans from our fans. That's
unusual. That's unusual.
That's because that TBC of our Wanderers game on the 16th of April, we all knew where it was going to be, even though they hadn't stated at the time. But it's going to be back at the SCG.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the moans and groans. I do. I get it. It's not that atmosphere cauldron that we had at the SFS. Obviously, we couldn't do a derby at Leichhardt. We have seen a derby at Cogra, which was all right. But I've got to say, the last year's derby that we won 1-0, I know maybe it was because where we were sitting, that we were up behind the Cove and the atmosphere was awesome there, thanks to them. But it was all right. It was all right.
Yeah. Mate, I like you said, I get it, but I don't care. As long as there's football on, I don't really care. I didn't think the Cogra at Derby was was that bad last season, aside from the result? And having to watch Daniel Georgievsky act like a dickhead. Yeah, I mean, like you said, the atmosphere at the SCG Derby was great. Again, walking down that tunnel after the match was it just gives you all the vibes, and I look forward to it. I look forward to it again. You know, people find a lot to complain about. I think let's get on with it. Let's go there and let's win the derby.
Absolutely. And it's just a couple of changes. One that I'm a little bit bummed about is the 12th of December one. It was supposed to be like a 4 or 4:30 kickoff. You know, it's my favorite away game up at Central Coast. So now it's been pushed back to 6 o'clock. So I was hoping that,
you know, for you, Sean.
That lovely afternoon time up on the Central Coast with the water there, and then finishing at about 6:30, go have a few beers, and we have our meal together, and then we can not feel rushed to get that last train or so home. So it does mess up the plans, our plans anyway.
Makes it a little bit more difficult, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Just makes it a little bit more difficult. But, again, it is what it is, Sean. Football.
No, but Jonathan, earlier this week, maybe a few days ago, you creamed your pants. figuratively speaking, listeners, speaking.
I dropped a satchel of cream.
Yeah.
I was having with some scones.
I'm doing the bicep pump. Adrian Mizajewski. Can I say it properly, Jonathan? You said it very well.
Mizajewski.
That's the one. Do we read anything into this?
I think it's right there in front of us, isn't it?
I've done the screenshot.
So there's a bit of a Twitter interaction. I think Adrian was in response to All Sides of the Harbour post, actually, just calling out that he actually preferred his second free kick in the pissing down rain at Allianz as his preferred weapon of choice in terms of his free kicks. And DT, lovely Danny Townsend, has engaged with him, and of course everyone, you know, Sydney FC fans getting on and saying, you know, come back, please come back. Danny's added his 2 cents, and Adrian's jumped in there and said, give me one more year and I'm ready.
Would you want to see him back in a year's 100%, time?
100%.
You think he'd still 100%. Be the same Adrian as what?
Yeah, I think so. I think he just turned 35. So if we're talking next season, you know, he'll possibly just be 36. I think his injury record's been not too bad over the last couple of years. It was. I know he had a calf problem when he was with us that kept him out for a little bit, but definitely not an extended period. So Danny Townsend's told him that he's got his number. So it could be on. This could be on. I loved Tom Smithy's comment at the bottom of it all. Tom Smithy's who's doing great work for the APL now as well in their media department. He said, guys, like, you're ruining the journalistic integrity of transfer rumours, like, if you're talking in public. Like, you're not supposed to do it that way.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, mate? I'd welcome him back with open arms at any time, really. I think he just absolutely took the piss out of the league that year.
He had one season.
Yeah, and we won the cup. We won the Premier's Plate by a country mile, but we didn't win the grand final. So maybe that's a little bit of motivation for Adrian.
Business. I wouldn't say no. I'm just wary of his age. But
yeah,
he was a fan favourite.
Yeah, absolutely.
For those who weren't aware, we've had Anton, Jonathan, say the last name for me.
Milanovic.
That's the one. As he's been on loan to Brisbane, and I wasn't expecting the young fella to, I thought maybe, you know, make the bench, you know, as that cover like McGing did on the weekend for us.
90 but minutes?
He started, gets 20 minutes. His first ever A-League game.
Professional appearance.
Albeit for another club other than us, not us, but plays 90 minutes against last year's champions.
and did a pretty good job.
Yeah, and held his own. I did for a second when it got to 2-0. I thought, oh, is this going to blow out to maybe 4-0? But to Brisbane's credit, they fought back and ex-Sky Blue.
Mm.
Luke Ivanovic getting on the score sheet to make it 2-1. And they, I thought it was onside.
So did I.
I think it should have been 2-1.
City conspiracy, Melbourne City conspiracy.
Yeah, so maybe, you know, I just think City are human. They're not as immortal.
Well,
none of them are,
round one, Sean. Let's,
let's anyway, but congratulations to Anton getting a start. Obviously, he's made
it. Yeah, it's great news.
In his short time there and him getting that kind of football. And that's the whole purpose of this
month. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, right. The training, getting game time. He'll come back to us. And he'll be a better player for it. So,
I mean, look at exactly right, Sean. Look at Liam McGing, right? So, again, that's possibly a signing to help fill the Milanovic void. If that was, you know, if he hadn't gone on loan, he would have sat on the bench the whole game.
Yeah,
you know. So that's good business, and that hopefully keeps his spot, and. Yeah, keeps turning the minutes over. It's fantastic.
Now, like last week, normally on was it 1 or 2 days before the game, the club releases Inzaghi. And, you know, I was looking forward to seeing how many more weeks away Zula was coming back from injury.
You already know it's one. Yeah.
Another week. But no, that didn't come. And for us as, you know, professional podcasters, it does help us with content. And also just, I think just for the regular average Joe pundit out there, they like to start to get a sense of who the starting 11 is going to be. And it just creates maybe a little bit of conversation 24 to 48 hours out before the game.
But are they doing this to create different conversations? Like, bit more speculation, maybe. I don't know. I don't see the benefit in doing it except pissing people off. You know, obviously a bit of secrecy for the managers, maybe. But if they wanted to do that, they could have still done that by saying, you know, a player's out for X or whatever else. So yeah, just annoying, just really annoying. Like you said, maybe we're a bit biased because we're a podcast and we like to sort of know what's happening, but. Danny, fix it, please.
Well, you've got his number.
I do, yeah. Yeah, I do.
Adrian has his number.
I'll text him. What
do people do?
My people will talk to his people. And
let me just round out this around the ground session with saying the SFC women, they're getting their pre-season underway. They did actually, although got no talk, but just because we know people in the know, a pre-season game against the Wanderers at CommBank last week. You weren't privy to that information.
Oh, no. Oh, hang on.
Oh, well.
Hang on. Really? Oh, really, Sean?
This is the one thing out of the 100 that I've been privy to.
I'm losing my value to this podcast and I don't like it.
They actually did have a game at CommBank last week against the Wanderers. I think it was on Wednesday. I don't know the result. But I think it was kind of used as Paramount's way to, you know, get all the cameras and whatnot in place and kind of do like a dry run, a practice run for that weekend's games.
I heard we won 7-0.
Did you actually know the result?
No.
Well, it's a wonder. It's quite possible. But we actually did have an actual game as well on the weekend against Wellington Phoenix.
Against the Sheenix.
Yeah, against the new girls, new women. Charlie Rule, funnily enough, and Courtney getting the goals, a 2-0 win. I'll admit, and this is rude of me, but I was kind of thinking, hang on, and this is so arrogant, but I'll say it, why wasn't it 4 or 5-0? I know.
Brand new team, 20-year-olds.
Yeah, and they're a young team, new team.
And from the limited photos and footage that we saw, Sydney looked to have a pretty, like we had our strongest team in by the looks of it. Nat Tobin, Princess, Courtney
was there.
Yeah.
Remy.
I reckon we just went a bit soft on them. Just, yeah, you know, welcome to the A-League Women's.
A-League Women. Yeah.
That's it. That's it. Awesome. Fantastic. That's a very, very comprehensive and
thorough,
varied around the ground, Sean. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let's talk Sydney Derby, shall we?
We shall. Okay, nil or draw. What I first noticed was the outs.
Yeah, let's talk starting lineup.
Yeah, so, well, we had no Bobo, no Costa. Obviously, we knew Bratz wasn't going to be there. And you and I know because, you know, our connections and networking. Donicky wasn't going to be there either. But the first two, we were surprised with Bobo and Costa.
Yeah. Firstly, surprised they weren't in the starting lineup. Secondly, surprised they weren't on the bench. And again, this is what we're just talking about, Sean, with the ins and outs. You know, are they simply not selected or are they injured? Are they sick? Do they have COVID? Are we saving them for, you know, Wednesday night?
Mm.
Who knows?
Apparently, you find out Bobo had a calf thing?
Apparently so. Yeah, apparently so. For a week or two, I think they mentioned. Interesting starting lineup. The back line, as expected.
As you'd expect with Grant, Wilco, Warland and King. I think Donicky does have his nose out in front of Warland, but in saying that, you and I would be totally comfortable seeing Warland in that spot alongside Wilco week in.
Absolutely. Midfield as expected, but then the front four was where the surprises were.
Well, Ninko we expected to be there. It's more the two people on, you know, in either side of Alfie.
Yeah, exactly right.
With Elvis and Trent. But under the circumstances, no Bobo and Costa, it made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, with those two, you could have argued that, you know, Paddy Wood could have gotten a start ahead of Trent, and Max Burgess could have had a start ahead of Elvis. But I think, you know, if we talk about the game a bit generally before we get into the moments that mattered, Sean, you know, it seemed that we were loading that right hand side with a bit of pace to really test Adama Traore, and it seemed to work with Kemp Sober and Trent sort of lining up on the same side of the pitch. That's what I took from the starting lineup anyway.
That's what I feel they did to us first RB last season. Got us with pace.
Test retro.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was out of position. Yeah. So general thoughts before we go into play-by-play, Sean?
If you looked at the stats, they were pretty much even. But personally, from where I was standing, I feel like we were the better team. I felt that we looked the more likely to score. I wouldn't go as far as say as dominate. I'm trying to think of a less strong of a word, but we certainly had the better run of play and we looked better in and out of possession, a bit more effective in those areas and in field position. So I think one thing I noticed the most was when we didn't have possession, we were really, really quick to shut them down and scramble and that intensity was really there. So, yeah.
Which is something we thought we might struggle with
leading
into the game without Bratton there. To block those corridors and to win back possession. But Caceres in particular, I thought, did a really good job, and Retre to a degree, although, again, never looked 100% comfortable. So that bodes well, definitely bodes well for the season ahead. Atmosphere going into the ground, Sean, you rocked up about a minute before kickoff.
Yeah, got a club power in enemy territory. It was very nice there. Actually, I think the alcohol was more expensive than inside the ground. So that says a lot. But look, it was a good derby, good atmosphere. It is a nice stadium, I will say it. It is a good stadium to go watch football at. So, yeah.
I agree with most people when they say, let's not do a Sydney derby round one.
Yep.
Again, it just felt a bit weird. Obviously, there was...
Yeah, we get why from a...
Yeah,
things, you know,
broadcast,
kind of spark the season, but I think luckily
you need a bit of build up anticipation, you know,
where they're sitting on the table, maybe they're in second and third and jostling and, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but so. Anyway, we've got two more derbies to look forward to.
We do.
Another one before the end of the year and then one much later.
We do. All right, mate, take us through some of the moments that mattered, mate.
This got you reminiscing, Jonathan.
It did. It really did.
Yours ended a lot worse than what Redders did with that wonderful face save.
I'll give him some tips.
Yeah. Just a little context, guys. Jonathan used to play all-age football with us when we were playing for Strathfield, and we were playing up at Blair Park. And I think it was a wet day, and I don't think you certainly weren't our first-choice goalkeeper, but, you know, you're a team.
I'm offended. No, that's true.
You're on the gloves. Saved a goal with your face. Ambulance came.
Knee to face.
Yeah, I remember you just like on the floor, half dead. Your dad,
I just
bit panicky, and you're like, "Don't worry, guys, just play around me."
Tooth falling out of face, 8 stitches. I don't know why Redders got up off the ground. Like, I don't understand. I'm like, isn't he dead? Like,
and we had such a good view of it from where we, you know, behind the goal in the cove.
That's right.
I don't think it was going to go in, but it still looked pretty spectacular. And Dimi Petrados, that probably only glimpse of something that he's got that he showed on the night.
Redders had a great game overall, I thought, but yeah, that save in particular, right in front of the cove, was memorable. Was memorable.
But then later in the game, on the 32nd minute, we should wax lyrical about Elvis throughout this review several times. He was fantastic, I gotta say. Yeah, okay, his touch at times was a little bit heavy and whatnot, but his energy and work ethic, you described him as being busy. He just looked to be on the ball and get himself on the ball when we had possession or they did. I was very pleased with Elvis.
Yeah, great. A fantastic debut. In a derby that probably lacked and has for a little while, you know, lacked that pantomime villain as well.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, Elvis under a bit of pressure from certain corners of Sydney FC fandom, including ourselves, you know, a little bit questionable about the business. But he came out and sort of brushed those off with aplomb. I think, like you said, Sean, exceptionally busy, even if did, you know, slip and slide a little bit and lose possession on occasions. But he threw himself into
just the effort was, and any mistakes that were made were never from a lack of effort, and you know,
and moments of quality like this cross that we're talking about,
the run and the cross, the nicely weighted cross to the near post for Trent.
Yep.
And I think some people might forget that Trent, you know, he's not all just the pace and, you know, scoring a goal with his feet. He has put a header or two away. So that lovely sweet glancing header guiding it in, and only to be saved really well.
Both keepers made a couple of, you know, game savers, really. Mahias, a decent debut for him as well. And he's a big lad. When he was in front of us, we noticed that, you know, the reason he's a goalkeeper. So yeah, great piece of play from Sydney. Probably the best chance of that first half. But a great save.
And if there was somebody else on the night that impressed us, it was Argentinian Messi, Anthony Caceres. He was brilliant. Slowy, I told you, mate. He's fantastic. I think he's, I don't know if underrated is the right word, but he deserves a starting spot somewhere. I know our future in the midfield is probably, well, obviously, Bratton and Callum. If he doesn't get picked up by somebody else, if they're smart, but and head overseas. But anyway, I digress. But great pressing from Caceres. He wins the ball.
Second half, this is, yeah.
Yeah, in the second half, 54th minute, and a great, you know, instinctive shot from outside the box from Alfie to the keeper's right.
Adam LaFondant couldn't put the icing on the cake, Sean.
Yeah.
Ooh. Adam LaFondant.
Nice. I get it. Thanks, man.
Do you like that?
Yeah, it was all right.
I've been waiting.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant shot. Brilliant shot and very well described by you, Sean. Very instinctive. Took it first time, beautiful body position, and once again, Mejias with a lovely save, unfortunately.
Yeah, fast forward again, 20-odd minutes later, Burgess, I think it was pretty much his first touch getting out there, but the ball comes out from the corner, again, instinctively hits it or volleys it, like half volley, and just brushes past, you know, millimetres away from the outside of the right post again. And then, you know, I think it was more or less a regulation save of sorts, but good, great shot from Rodwell, the new boy from Sunderland. The young prodigy or whatever.
It actually got the neutral off their seat. I think it was a decent hit.
Yeah.
Shortly after coming on himself, just like Burgess, and Redder's lovely save around the post.
What do you reckon of the subs made on the night? Like Bishan has been very critical of subs.
Yeah. Look.
On the night,
I think we. When they were needed, I think they sort of happened. I think you've got to give Corica a bit of credit there. I think for a first game of the season, I think in the past we've probably criticised for leaving them a bit late and sort of giving the players out there a chance to sort of do something. But, you know, first one at the 64th minute, which was Paddy Wood on for Trent. Trent obviously, again, not under a fitness cloud, but hasn't played 90 minutes for a very long time.
Yeah.
So Paddy Wood coming on, and I thought he did a good job. Pat Wood again, he sort of got into some good positions. Dwelt on the ball. He had one chance late, but probably got his pocket pinched. But did a good job. And the other subs were a bit more, I guess, predictable with Maxi Burgess deputising for Ninko, which we've heard Ninko come out and say that's what's going to be happening, and we'll get into our previews of the games a bit later, Sean, but I imagine
we can see Burgess, you know, next season, you know, having that spot of Ninko's.
Yeah.
The one I was a little bit perplexed about, but you know, quick to correct me, was Harry coming on for Elvis. I always think of Harry as a defender.
Mm.
But I remember that was last season, we were playing at Cogger against somebody and Harry came on late-ish. And I was like, what is he doing bringing Harry on? That's a wrong sub. And he was fantastic up front and made this like bullocking run.
Similar, you're right. He also did it against Raw away at Dolphin.
Mm.
Sorry, there's an animal barking in the background of my lovely studio here.
Are you on that Sky Park already?
Sorry, yeah, just at Sky Park. Just
the studio first. Yeah, Danny, just around it.
Danny's taking the poodles for a walk.
That's it.
Around the outside. and came on, and like I said, against Raw late in the season last year, and scored a pretty good goal from a similar run. So, and again, we've seen Harry for the NPL play as a right winger. You know, of a right-sided midfielder. So again, his versatility is an absolute asset to the team.
Mm. And what did you make of Alfie's performance on the night? I know he had that great shot that was saved, but he seemed a bit frustrated.
I feel like, and I say this for all of them, it's hard to be critical of many of them. It is round one. Look, he didn't get the service, and when he had chances, he tried to make the most of them. But I'll shamelessly steal something that I read. I can't remember who it was or where it was, but someone was saying that it's about finding that balance again with the overall squad, Sean. So on the right hand side, you've got Ryan Grant and Elvis Campsober. So Ryan Grant's strength are those bombing runs, you know, high and wide down the right-hand side to sort of create space and, you know, whip some balls in. But that space on the weekend was occupied by Elvis, because Elvis was doing the same thing. So you're staying wide on the right and trying to, you know, occupy that space and come in. So it sort of made it hard then to get the ball up to the front two. And like I said, this is completely stolen, but I really hit home that, you know, if we're going to play Ryan Grant and Elvis on the right-hand side, maybe Elvis needs a bit more instruction to play further inside. So we can take advantage of Buster down the right-hand side. So, yeah, didn't get too many chances, but I thought it did quite well. I thought Trent did quite well as well.
You were a little critical of Retray on the night?
Yeah. It's just, like I said, you're just never comfortable, I think, as a fan watching.
He was playing the holding midfielder role, you know, dropping in deep between the two centre backs, between Warner and Wilco.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna slate him. I'm not gonna slate him, but I just too long on the ball, too many touches, not aware of what was around him. I just don't know if that comes naturally to him. But again, I don't want to be too hard on anyone because it's the first game of the season, so. I think he and AC actually did very, very well to control the midfield up against, you know, Antonis, Petratos, you know, it.
Like that midfielder three of theirs, this is...
Rogakovic.
Like, and you said about, I don't know, close to halftime, you didn't even realise that Beanie was on the field.
Yeah. It's probably the 70th minute or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but do you know what? The other thing I noticed when I watched the replay, Sydney, we still don't possess any players in that lineup, obviously Luke Bratton and Neuenhoff aside. Any players in our lineup from the weekend that'll have a shot from outside the box comfortably?
Well, Rowdy had a stat, you know, season two, about lack of shooting from outside the box. And we mentioned it before on our pods when we've been recording.
But then, so we very much sort of a work into the box type, you know, team, which is fine, especially when you've got, you know, poachers like Alfie and Bobo in the lineup usually. But what it means is that every team will know that we're not going to do that, right? So they will set their defensive line up to make sure that they can deal with us pressing into the box. And you saw Ninko try and dribble around, you know, six or seven guys, which he does. But then he had a couple of opportunities to unleash, but still wanted to get a bit closer into the box.
Yeah, the shot in the first half in front of the RBB.
Took a touch.
And when he did pull the trigger, it was a very tame one.
So without Bratton and possibly... again, Neuenhoff, but I don't want to put too much pressure on him. You then look at the Wanderers, Sean, and they had that Rodwell chance from far out. They've got Bulgakovic, who is, you know, that's his signature, is scoring bangers from outside the box. Dimi Petratos, another one who could score from, you know, the other half if you give him the chance. And then they've got Toma Hemed, who was pretty disruptive early on. I thought Warland and Wilkinson did an outstanding job on him for probably one of the best, you know, number nines in the league. But they've got that mix, which we didn't seem to have. So, it's interesting to watch.
We've got players who can do it. Caceres did it against, was it Victory, with that left foot to the keeper's far right post. And, you know, like you said, Callum and Bratz aren't afraid to do it. And so I don't know if it's maybe being coached out of us, and it's a tactic.
Just a bit of variation. You know, they need. So, yeah.
Like, I like what I appreciate what Alfie did. He didn't eventuate in a goal, but he turned and hit it. Didn't hesitate.
Exactly.
Bruno Fonaroli's goal. Like, holy crap.
That was all right.
Let's give him goal of the year already.
That was all right, wasn't it?
But yeah, I'd like to see more of that. Just take a dig, you know, keep him, hits the post, keep it. Fumbles it, parries it, and then Bobo can have his tap in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
Should we go? Dono,
yeah.
Happy with the game? Look, familiar faces there. We had some familiar faces out.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of lacking in the final third. I think Caceres was saying after the game, a little bit of work to be there in the final third, but that's been a bit typical in the last couple of seasons. But I love the intensity.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I like the desire, the intensity, but yeah, I'm pretty content with the draw in the first round away derby, given our record the last couple of years. I think there's some pretty good signs there, Sean. So yeah, probably a little bit more optimistic for what's to come.
SFC votes.
Yeah, so for those new to the podcast or to Sydney FC fandom in general, our very good friend Rowdy, SFC Statistics on Twitter and sfcstatistics.com, is a stat man for the club. And on the forum, SFCU, which is Sydney FC fan forum, they run a supporter player of the year. So how it works is you get 6 votes per game. You can allocate those 6 votes however you'd like. So if you're not on that forum and you'd like to contribute, make sure you get over there and have a vote. Obviously, the more people that do vote, the better representation of the fan base we get. So we're going to do that every single week on the pod, as we have done for the last year and a half or 2 years. Sean, how have you swayed this game?
Most chances, thank you to this, credit to you for showing this from the forum. Most chances created, 4 out of any from both teams. Most successful tackles, 5 out of anyone from both teams. Most interceptions, 5 out of any from both teams. So Anthony Caceres gets my 3 points.
3 points, fantastic. Yeah.
2 to Elvis.
Yep, that's fair.
And 1 to Wilco.
Onto Wilco. Very good. Very good. I've shared the love a little bit. I've given 2 to Elvis Kansoba, 2 to Anthony Caceres, 1 to Ben Warland, and 1 to Andrew Redmayne for making a couple of crucial saves at crucial times. Yeah. So they are our votes for the Sydney Derby Round 1 A-League Men's. I onwards and upwards, Sean, I think, on that one.
Absolutely.
Stick, coming up next on Sky Blue Stories, we celebrate Indigenous Football Week with Tiffany Stanley, who joined Sean and I earlier in the day, just to have a quick bit of a chat about, like I said, all things John Moriarty football and Indigenous Football Week, what it's all about, what Tiffany's been up to in the central west of New South Wales, and of course, Sean and I are trying to convince her and all of her students to become Sydney FC fans. So enjoy this little chat. To help raise awareness for Indigenous Football Week 2021, Sky Blue Stories is honoured to be joined by a member of John Moriarty Football to help us spread the good word. Tiffany Stanley is a proud Wiradjuri woman from central New South Wales and is one of just a handful of female football coaches to have a C-licence accreditation. Tiffany joins us today in the middle of Indigenous Football Week, where I'm sure she's become an expert on forums, webinars, and hopefully soon podcasts. Tiffany, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on here with you guys. Thank you for this opportunity.
It's really exciting to have you here, Tiff, during this Indigenous Football Week. So in a nutshell, can you tell our listeners a bit about yourself and your connection to the world game?
So I am a proud Wiradjuri woman. I was born and raised in Dubbo. I had played football since I was little. I actually played with my brother and then I followed him to rugby league. Then at a certain age, girls can't continue in league. So I went back to football and continued playing with my auntie. And yeah, so I still play along with my auntie sometimes, which is really good.
And you're a part of the John Moriarty Football organisation there. So when you hear of the JMF and John Moriarty, what comes to mind? What, you know, it's a little bit of a word association game here. What comes to mind when you hear JMF football?
A lot of kids are like rugby league. It's different football. When we go into schools and they say John Moriarty football is here, a lot of them are like, oh, we're playing footy. So it's hard to try to get the kids to learn the technical term. But now when kids know that Moriarty or are coming into their school, they love it. They're so excited. We see a lot more footballs in the playground as well, at recess and lunch playing. The kids love it. We see a lot more of football being played since, coming into schools.
Fantastic. And as we know, Dubbo, you know, Central New South Wales, probably traditionally a bit of a rugby league heartland. But you're obviously a C-accredited coach. What's a day in the life for, you know, a John Moriarty football coach in Dubbo? What's a day-to-day look like for you?
So I am on a satellite team. So we have two teams that are in Dubbo. So teams that go to schools outside of Dubbo and teams that will go to school inside in town at Dubbo. I'm part of the satellite school. So I attend, I think, five schools during the week each day. We also have an afternoon select group. So kids that we have identified with talent, we ask them to come to a training after school on a Monday. We also go into the Juvenile Justice Centre as well and play some football with the kids. We also help with tutoring as well. The kids do tutor. We also support with that. So, it's a lot. We also are running a breakfast. Yes, we have started a breakfast club as well. So,
Because John Moriarty, it's not just football, is it? It's about the whole lifestyle and you know, health and well-being. And
very holistic and, approach, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Yes. We try to, like, not only be there for their football side, but to, try to help them with their life skills as well and managing that. So, with the breakfast club, so say getting out of bed early, most kids struggle with that. But in life, it's a really good thing to have, so you can just get up and go.
Yeah, fantastic. And you're coming to us from a little town, little community called Peak Hill at the moment. Can you tell us a little story about how JMF has helped rebuild the football community there?
Yeah, so we have currently been delivering at Peak Hill Central School for, I think, 2 years now. JMF has been here. And since then, so since this year, they have started up their football club back up and running. We have been coming to their schools, they have been loving football, which this town is also a league town as well. So it's hard to change them to football, but a lot of the kids you see love playing football. So yeah, JMF, with us coming to their schools, we have helped them and their community get their teams back up and running. So yeah.
Fantastic.
And I want to, you know, congratulate you on achieving your coaching C license. I went through the process a handful of years ago, and it is a tough gig going through the process, applying your trade through there. I just want to ask you, how has it transformed you as a coach? And, what have you taken away from gaining your national qualification in coaching?
I would definitely say more confidence. I lacked a lot of confidence. And then doing my C license, I was very nervous as well. Not a lot of confidence. I found the planning okay. I just found the bringing it to life and delivering it was lacking my confidence. Now since doing my C license, I have improved so much with my planning, my bringing my sessions to life, and most of all, just my confidence.
Fantastic. And we touched on it before, Tiffany, but how can or how does football transform the lives of Indigenous kids in the Central West?
It can definitely change their lives for good. I feel as if you want it, you can get it. You just have to work for it. It doesn't matter where you are or where you come from, your background. If you do want something, you definitely have to work for it.
Teaching them good morals, good ethics.
Yes, definitely. To see someone like Shay come from a little background and a little place and be where she is now, I definitely share Shay's story a lot with our kids in Dubbo as well.
And for those listeners out there, one of the themes for Indigenous Football Week 2021 is gender equality. And for anyone who knows football coaching or soccer coaching in some corners, it is incredibly male dominated in terms of all those coaching positions. So how can girls and women get into coaching more? What advice or how would you go about steering them into a life of football coaching? Because there's plenty of female volunteers in and around clubs, but not necessarily in a coaching respect. So how can we get more girls and women into coaching, especially when it comes to coaching girls and women?
I feel at the start I was a bit scared about getting into coaching. As myself being a player, I felt it was different, but I feel like if you love playing, the coaching will always come with it. So myself as a player, I was always on the field and showing and helping the guys on what I wanted. Sorry, I'm going a little bit off topic.
No, go for it.
Could you please say the question again? Sorry.
How can we get more women and girls into football coaching? Because it is such a male-dominated industry or position of sorts.
Yes. Okay. So with that, I feel as well as having female coaches that other females can shadow. At the start, I was mostly it was mostly the males I work with helping me, and I was shadowing them. Where I would have loved to have a female that I could shadow and learn from. I feel like having the up-and-coming coaches shadowing, other female coaches that have been there for a while, I feel like even doing a C-license course, but just with all women, and even having a women lead that session. I just feel like that... just as a lot of women don't have a lot of confidence as well. So I feel like, if you have the confidence, you can
go anywhere. So having those role models and those female mentors.
Yes, definitely. I feel that is, a really good one.
And what advice would you, for people out there, the football season's not too far away, excitingly, and hopefully it's not a season that's cut short by COVID and lockdown again. Any pieces of advice you'd give a coach out there who might be a dad taking his under-8 son's football team or, a young kid at the club trying to get involved and taking an under-12 girls team? Any advice you'd give to a young coach out there?
Just give it a go, I say. And there's no such thing as failing. I say give it a go, because the more you keep trying, the more you'll get better. So, I just say don't give up.
Very good advice. Very good advice. So, Tiffany, as you know, we are a Sydney FC-based podcast, so we better talk about them for a little bit. And, we've been extremely lucky over the years, particularly in the women's team, to have some wonderful Indigenous footballers. We've had Kai Simon, Shaydeen Evans, who you mentioned earlier, now Jada Wyman. Who's also a Wiradjuri woman, I believe. She might be from Wagga Wagga, I think. So we've been extremely lucky. As opposed to, obviously, Dubbo, like you said, being a rugby league heartland, does JMF, do you guys make sure you do celebrate those women and those people, as opposed to, a David Peachy or a Tyrone Peachy who's from Wellington just down the road there?
Yes. Sorry. Could you adapt on that again?
Yeah. So just telling you, does John Moriarty tell the stories of Kaya, Shaydeen, Jada, I guess the principle of, if you can see it, you can be it. Do you celebrate those stories?
Yes. I definitely use Shay's story a lot, especially with the young girls I teach as well. Especially the troubled ones that, are going through stuff, as not everyone does have the best upbringing. I love to use Shay's story as an inspiration to the other guys, the other girls, just to let them know that, no matter where you are or where you come from, you can do anything if you want to do it. So.
Fantastic. And it's good to see those girls giving back to the program as well. I've seen you standing side by side with Jada out there, and it's wonderful to see her recently get a very well deserved Matilda's call up. So hopefully in the not too distant future, we can see Jada in a in an Australian jersey, which would be wonderful.
Yes, definitely. Actually, to with that, we during our holidays previously that just went, we ran an online all-girl session. Mm-hmm. And Jada was actually one of our special guests. And fantastic. One of the questions I asked Jada was, does she see herself as becoming a Matilda? As she's already up there, does she? I just wanted to know if she had any more goals in her future to progress her football. And yeah, one of her goals was to eventually be a Matilda.
So tell us, Tiffany, when you're not coaching, they're part of the John Moriarty program. Is there anybody that you support, any teams or players that you barrack for?
So I don't really support a team though, but I do have a few players I support. So Jada Wyman, definitely support her. Shay Evans as well, I support. Gemma Simon, she's really amazing as well, very lovely and down to earth. And Mary Fowler, which I haven't met, but I would love to meet. She has a lot of skills. Yes, definitely. That one goal she got in the Matildas game was amazing. And I was like, we need Mary Fowler.
Absolutely. Yeah, she's just broken onto the scene. She's incredible.
She is. So it sounds like, Tiffany, that we'll be sending you a Sydney FC scarf, because it sounds like you need a team. So not that you'll need a scarf in Dubbo in the months ahead, but in the winter it can get very cold there. So I think we'll have to send you out some merchandise and make you an honorary Sydney FC supporter.
Yeah, definitely. That would be a good one.
Fantastic. Well, look, Tiff, we know you've got other Indigenous Football Week engagements coming up. It's been such an honour for us to have you on the podcast and share some thoughts and with us. And, from Sean and myself, thank you so much. Tell us where, if our listeners want to find out a bit more about Indigenous Football Week, what's the best way for them to do that?
So we have a John Moriarty Football Facebook page, and we are going live every day at 2 o'clock this week about Indigenous Football Week. So if you would like to know more about Indigenous Football Week, join one of the pages and watch the lives. So
watch your good self. Watch your good self.
Yeah.
Good luck with it all.
Thank you.
Good luck with it all. Thanks once again. And hopefully we'll talk again in the future.
Thank you so much.
That was a chat with Tiffany Stanley, a very informative chat about the John Moriarty football program out there in the Central West, particularly in Dubbo. I really appreciate your time with the pod, with me and you, Jono. We've got more football, so much football this week. So you don't have to wait till Saturday night.
All the football.
To watch your boys in blue go around tomorrow night, well, tonight, by the time you're listening to this podcast and it's released. We are up against the might, the Adonis, the Hercules, the Zeus, that is Sydney Olympic in the FFA Cup, the long-awaited FFA Cup that's been finally here after COVID and lockdown has spoiled. But we finally get to enjoy some football at a fantastic ground, Jono. I'm biased.
Yeah, you are.
Because I live very close. Don't tell anybody where I live.
You're also ex-Olympic.
Ex-Olympic. And as a player too. I had that half a stint before I broke my leg again.
Do you reckon, Sean, I've got a question for you. Do you reckon Sydney Olympic have promoted the game enough?
No.
Do you reckon they could have done a bit more?
Oh, yeah. They flogged it. They flogged the shit out of it. They were their capital F. Fuck me dead. I admire them, but like they've flogged it hard. And I just hope the weather's decent, because I think they're trying to create that carnival festive kind of atmosphere down there, which the Greeks and that culture is very good at doing. Lots of souvlaki, lots of lamb.
Looking forward to that.
24th November, 7:30 p.m. at the wonderful spiritual ground of Sydney Olympic, Belmore Sports Ground.
How good. It's another chance to wear those luscious kits, Sean. You're in your hushed turquoise on the weekend.
Thank you. Yes. Can I just quickly mention the kits, because you brought it to my attention. So Channel 10, Paramount, etc., have flogged the game in the last couple of days. Mm. And was it this morning? Yep. So you've got
Burgess brothers?
The Burgess brothers, and that's
not Sam and not Sam and George and Tom.
Or Mrs. Burgess, who knows? No. But yeah, so you've got Darce and Max as brothers, and they played together at Sydney Olympic last being in 2018 when they won it. They beat Apia in the final there at like 3-1.
Great night.
So that's one of the narratives that feeds in tomorrow night's game. But you noticed that Max was wearing last year's kit.
Yeah, it's not great, is it?
No, that's not. If for the average Joe out there, he may not follow the club or the A-Leagues, that wouldn't know the difference. But you and I and the like will go, hang on, that's our kit from 2 years ago. Was this year's kit in the wash?
I don't know. I'm kind of hoping at the game we're not wearing that.
Then look, Jonah, I'll say that that's going to be embarrassing if they trot out in last year's home kit.
Do you know what? So Olympic will be in their Olympic blue and white stripes, you would imagine. Stripes. So sky blue jerseys are out. Yeah. You would say
it's a different blue, but it's too much of a clash.
You'd actually almost say our away kit is out because it's white with the blue, you know, integration. Right. So for a kit that's only going to be worn once, surely that midnight purple
dark plum
Sydney Thunderstorm kit, which far and away everyone loves, surely that gets a run.
I don't think there's going to be a special FFA Cup jersey like we've had in...
Which is fine.
So this is a perfect opportunity to trot out the third kit, which is, I think it's these kinds of games and on the very weird, rare chance that it might, the home and the away might still clash with the whoever we're playing. So like the grey kit of last couple of seasons, I can only remember... one game we wore, and it was that first game against Adelaide when McGowan got the header.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure you wore it one
possibly
other
time. City away. It tends to be City away when they want to wear their sky blue kit. Oh, City blue, sorry. Yeah, so it'll be interesting. That's a bit of intrigue into the squad tomorrow night. But yeah, it just cheapens it a little bit by wearing last year's kit and banging an FFA Cup logo on it. I know there's been supply issues and whatever else, but it's up there with not having the proper A-League's logo, you know, on the supporter kit. So it'd be a bit disappointing. But anyway, let's talk about Sydney FC and Sydney Olympic. Last year, Sean, we were joined by a couple of members of Sydney Olympic and Apia Leichhardt when we were celebrating the Festival of Football. Fabio Ferreira and Sam McKillerton, who's actually playing at Olympic.
Yeah, I would have helped him. I reckon that's how he got the gig at Sydney Olympic, because he learned so much about them on the night.
True.
So when he had the interview,
their history.
Chewing.
that was good trivia, that one.
So thank you, I know. So we'll see Sam in the middle of midfield there, Fabio off the bench. They don't have the likes of Jason Madonis anymore, who's moved on. Will Angel's there.
Brendan Chalakian still.
Chalakian, he'll be in the middle, in the middle third as well, of course. Great player, Brendan Chalakian. Roy O'Donovan, of course.
Yeah, that's an interesting signing. Kolesky doesn't play there anymore, does he?
No. Roy O'Donovan got slated on the Sydney Olympic, you know, comments and stuff saying
how come?
That he was terrible.
Oh, okay. So
they're not too confident with him doing anything for them for the Olympic.
Probably a lot more successful than most other players in their front third, but that's okay.
Tom Whiteside, but that's another little narrative. Mm-hmm. Plays for Olympic. I'm pretty sure he's the captain of Olympic. Assistant coach for the women with Ante. So playing against his coach.
It's going to be a great night. I hope the weather, you know, today's not been as bad as what they thought. I hope the weather holds out, Sean, and they do get a good crowd. They deserve it. They've absolutely flogged this for everything it's worth. Cheap tickets, you know, they're $15 or something. If you're thinking about it, get down there. It's a massive grandstand. So hopefully a lot of that is undercover. If we do get a little bit of a precipitation falling from the sky,
us, Jonathan. What do you think? Who do you think will trot out?
Yeah, well, like I said, Sean, I think we were just talking about Sydney Derby. I think you see Max Burgess start for Ninkovic. I think you will also possibly see, you know, Callum Neuenhoff starting in the centre, potentially with Luke Bratton. So Bratz has served his suspension, so he's eligible to play in the Cup. So hopefully that's his first run out. And if Callum doesn't start in the centre, depending on how the boys have turned up with Caceres, then that'll be interesting.
Might get a start or some time. Maybe Bratton starts and then Pat comes on later on.
I'd be surprised if he started. It's always a good indication, these Cup games, especially when you draw an NPL side, and again, no disrespect, because they could roll us over. But it's always a good indication of how serious the coach is taking the Cup with the lineup that he puts out. You know, you see in other leagues around the world, certain managers not really giving a shit about the FA Cup or the League Cup, and they play their kids, basically. And if they get a result, they go, oh, yeah, great. Obviously, we don't have the luxury of that in the A-League men's because we don't have as big a squads. But, you know, we potentially have the opportunity to give some players that might not get a lot of football in the A-League, you know, some minutes, some solid minutes. So it'll be interesting to see. Sydney always come out and say we want to win trophies and we want to take this competition seriously. I'm not sure that's 100% true. I think there's a little bit of spin in that sometimes.
Yeah.
So it'd be very interesting to see how strong a lineup, you know, does Alfie play? You know, is Bobo back from injury? Is Costa back? You know, or does he roll out, you know, Connor O'Toole at left back?
Well, I can see I'm going to put my money on Ryan and Joel being rested. And
definitely Ryan. Definitely Ryan.
You might find Harry there.
Mm.
Or Paolo, or maybe even a Callum Talbot.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Be fairly comfortable for the likes of Callum and Paddy Wood and those younger, so to speak, players, because they've played against these boys in the NPL season.
I think normally this is a game that you might see Wilco sit out as well, but with Donaghy not fit, I think putting Warland and McGing in the centre would potentially be a bit risky.
Yeah.
If
we still had a Flotman and he was still hanging around, you know, he could slot in. He's played against these boys in the NPL before, so
It's intriguing. It's actually really it's really intriguing, and we've got a bit of a bigger squad than we normally do, Sean. So yeah, it'd be very interesting to see who backs up. And then later in the week, we've got another game on Saturday, so.
Mm.
It will be very interesting to see, but I think you see Luke Bratton start. 100%. I think you'll see
Callum.
Yeah, I think Callum will be in there, and I think you'll also see Pat Wood start in place of Trent potentially.
Mm. And Alfie as well, and maybe not Nico.
Yeah, Nico won't start. Definitely won't start. He might not even be in the squad, to be honest.
Mm.
Do
you want to give a score prediction?
I think it will be. It definitely won't be a walkover. I'll say 3-0. I'll say 3-0 Sydney, but you know, one of those goals will come quite late, I think. So
yeah,
they'll make us work for it. How about yourself?
I'm gonna say 3-1 Sydney.
Very good. When do Olympic get their goal? First or
last?
Okay.
3-0 and they'll snag one. Might make the last 10-15 minutes a little bit tenser.
Very good. Moving right along, Sean, we do have another game, obviously, A-League Men's Round 2, first home game of the season. Sydney hoping for a very big crowd at Cogra Jubilee, Saturday night, 27th of November, 7:45 p.m. kickoff. There's actually a Matildas game over at ANZ earlier that day. I've already heard quite a few people doing the double, Sean. But like I said, Sydney FC hoping for a big crowd for their first run out at home. And again, weather permitting, there should be no excuses as to why not.
But not ground permitting.
Not ground permitting.
Our ground is actually good enough to play on.
It's not a cow paddock.
Rest assured, MacArthur, that the game won't be moved. It will be played at Cogra.
That's good. Do you have evidence? Do you know if someone's actually gone and checked the pitch, Sean, in the last, I don't know, 5 months?
I'm going to wander down tomorrow. But to make up for it, and I don't think this goes far enough, but this is a MacArthur, to reward full season ticket holders for this Saturday's away fixture, the club will provide free entry tickets as a goodwill gesture.
So is that Sydney actually providing free tickets?
No, MacArthur.
Okay, so they're paying Sydney for tickets and giving it to their supporters.
Yeah. Interesting. Which I don't think goes far enough. Like if you I'd rather be
just imagine, just imagine, Sean, the build up to the most anticipated A-League men's season ever. Right? Your club's turned over a couple of players, but you're one game away from a grand final the previous year. You brought in the Johnny Warren medalist, you brought in one of the most exciting wingers in the league in Craig Noon. You've brought in, you know, a 2015 Asian Cup winner in Tommy Urich. Oh, and 2 days before the first game, the club announces that, sorry, guys, you can't actually come to the game on the weekend because our ground
membership
is,
you've spent a lot of money on and that cowbell you've purchased, you can't use it.
It's so wrong. It's just so wrong. And I know it's peak A-League, but we need to get rid of shit like this. Like, we just, it shouldn't happen, you know, for all the positivity and everything about the league. I mean, it's just a joke. And like we said, I think last week or possibly the pod before, Sean, it doesn't seem that everything is well at MacArthur, Fairfield, Northbridge, Bulls, Cows, Rams, whatever they're called. It's a big concern. So,
because as much as they are rivals on the competition table and cross-town enemies and whatnot, you want to call it, I actually kind of want them to do well just for the league itself.
Yeah.
I don't want a team just to come in and then disappear.
No, exactly. And it just, you know, again, you work hard to get a following and whatever else, like I said, and then that happened. Look, the COVID has screwed them in terms of timing and entering the league and having a delayed start to last season and everything else. But it's not looking good. It's not looking good. Anyway, hard to say what a lineup will look like, Sean, but if we look at the Sydney Derby lineup, let's discount the FFA Cup game for a second. Based on the Sydney Derby lineup, what sort of changes do you think for MacArthur on Saturday?
The four blokes that were missing, I don't think we'll see them for another week. Three or four, I should say. So Donicky, Costa, and Bobo. I think they'll be another week and look to for the following week. So
Zulo still 1 week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Poor bugger.
Good.
So I think that he'll trot out the exact same starting 11 as the Derby, except for Bratton for Retray.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And so.
Yep.
So tomorrow night's coming up. You'll see some of those starting 11. But they'll be pulled off at 45 minutes, 60 minutes, in something like that. So
yeah, I tend to agree.
I envisage Corica will trot out the same start, and it did a very good job, the starting 11 last week, but Braddon's a given. He goes in straight away.
It'd be a huge surprise, and I completely agree. A huge surprise if Broker changed anything else, because I don't think anyone deserves to lose their spot based on that Derby performance. Braddon just adds strength. It's simple as that, you know. So someone's got to come out. Everyone else did a great job. So yeah, hopefully that's the case, Sean. Predictions for we mentioned a few of the players that they've signed in the off season. They got a goal through Lockie Rose on the weekend to steal a point from Wellington. Their back line is a little bit makeshift. They've got some good defenders in Susnjar and Jovanovic, I think he's still there, and James Meredith. A couple of them playing a little bit out of position, but and they've got a new keeper in Philippe Curto, who, you know, won goalkeeper of the year for Phoenix only 2 seasons ago, maybe 3 seasons ago. on paper, they're very good. It's just a matter of, you know, can Milicic put it together and ignore some of the off-field drums?
Bit like the derby. Can it all looks great on paper, but can they gel and be cohesive? You know, we did beat them 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, maybe now, 5-0. Mm-hmm. But, you know, take that with a grain of salt. Who knows? And I think that was kind of right in the midst of Federici retiring, Milligan pulling up stumps and buggering off. So, yeah. So maybe, you know, in theory, albeit their grounds, everything's settled.
Yeah.
They're settling. So I don't think it's going to be a 5-0 like it was a month or so
ago. No, no.
I'd like it to be, certainly.
That'd be lovely.
but, yeah, I think it's going to be a tight game.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it, like we talk about the turnover, Sean, and one thing we didn't mention when we were talking about the derby, the Wanderers had just 3 players in their starting lineup that were in the senior squad last year. 3 players in Aquilina, Abini, and Agarkovic. Everyone else.
Agarkovic came late. Well,
yeah.
Through the season, halfway.
Everyone else was a player they've signed in the last little bit. Anyway, I digress. I would love to think that we're going to keep them scoreless, but I just don't know how with the players they've got to choose from. And Ulysses Davila is exceptional, and he certainly, you know, Wellington last year, he put on a show at Cogra. So I think he'll weave a little bit of magic, but I still think we win this one pretty comfortably. I'm going to say 4-1 Sydney FC.
Oh, 4-1, Jonathan.
Mm, yeah.
I'm going to say 2-1 to us.
Yeah. We're going to get some goals.
I'm going to say Alfie and Trent. And one of those will be an Elvis assist.
Nice. Very, very good. Before we leave you with a lovely Sean, anything else on MacArthur?
That's it.
Before we get the wonderful Stephanie Brantz to take us out of this week's podcast and preview the A-League Women's season for us, Sean, just a couple of general thoughts. We need to announce our Subbo winner.
Subbutio table football.
With as we said on last week's pod, with a lovely original Sydney Derby hand painted set of table football players, and it's a full kit. So you get the felt, you get the goals, you get the balls, and everything else. We put it into a little tool that I shamelessly stole off Jubal, called Spin Picker Wheel. Picker Wheel, it was called, and we had over 20 applicants that got their name in the ring. And pleased to say, Sean, the winner was drum roll, Shelby Wu or Michelle, who was a late entry, but they all count. And congratulations, Michelle. One of a very popular member of the Cove, and someone that Sean, you and I were commenting. We know who you are, Michelle, but come and say good day.
I know your face.
Yeah, come and say good day next time we're at the game. We will reach out to you and organise for that to come to you from Steve Detry, who we spoke to last week. Fantastic stuff, Sean. Great giveaway.
Oh, mate, so good. Like, and it's the starting 11. Mm. On the game, you know, it's not just any random, you know, 16 blokes for each team, you know.
Obviously we banned ourselves and Jules from entering, you know, seeing as Jules was co-hosting last week, but that didn't stop his mum from jumping on
and I love that
and entering for him on his behalf.
He must be the golden child in the family.
Exactly. And happy anniversary to Jules and his lovely wife tonight. He was going to join us, however we thought, you know, we'll try and get him to go for 3 years and not join a football podcast on a Tuesday night. Hopefully Jules will be back with us next week to talk some more Sydney FC action. Any other general business from you, Sean?
No, just looking forward to seeing people's faces on a relatively dry night tomorrow or tonight, if you're listening to it, the FFA Cup game. Some of my favourite nights watching Sydney FC play have been like over at Indenza Park with those past FFA Cup games. trying to think if we've been anywhere else for an FFA Cup game. Oh, the Wanderers game at Penrith.
Yep. Semi-final.
Was that Sim Dion getting the free kick? Was that?
It was, yeah.
Trent scored a goal too.
That's right. That was a great night. That was a great night.
Yeah, so they're fun nights. They feel a little bit different to an A-League night because I guess they're more local and community-minded, but
yeah,
looking forward to it. And then that night finishes and you only got to wait in, what, 72-odd hours until there's more football.
And it's a big week for you, Sean. Happy birthday for Friday.
Thank you.
25, I think it is.
25 for, what, 25. 10 years in a row now. So
I'd say happy birthday, mate. Happy
36 birthday. I'll be pushing
40,
so, yeah.
Hey, look, you know, do you know what the good news is? It only gets worse from here.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Enjoy. Thanks for joining us this week on Sky Blue Stories. We leave you with, as we said, the very talented and exceptional Stephanie Brantz, who you can catch for ESPN FC and also on SEN 1170 this year, talking A-League women's. And she's done a Sydney FC focus one for us, and that'll take us out this week. We'll be back again to review those games we've just spoken about and much, much more. Everything in the world of Sydney FC. Be good to each other. If you see Sean at the games, make sure you come up and say happy birthday.
Hi there, my name is Stephanie Brantz. I've been involved in sports broadcasting for over 20 years in Australia now, and also abroad. I've particularly concentrated, of course, on the women's game. I've been a commentator, reporter, host, and writer, amongst many other roles. So it's been really exciting to see how that job's evolved over the years with the development of the women's game and to see it all come to a head in a couple of years' time with the Women's World Cup on home soil. It's going to be truly amazing. Now, the guys at Sky Blue Stories have asked me to preview Sydney FC A-League Women's upcoming 21-22 season. It's been fascinating to see how this squad has been built because in seasons past, there were minimal changes to the core of the playing group. Sydney FC could be relied on to lock in their players early and keep the consistency from year to year with a bit of tweaking here and there. So what jumps out immediately this year is the absence of the engine room, the beating heart of this side for so many years. Teresa Pelias is not on the team sheet. W League Games record holder and Sydney FC captain. She's played in 7 grand finals and led Sydney FC to 5 of the past 6 deciders. She's a huge loss in experience. And of course, while we wish her well as she concentrates on family life, as someone who's covered the league since that opening season, it's going to be so strange to not have midfielder T out on the park. Now, how much that affects Sydney will remain to be seen. This is, as we know, a side used to success. And there is that expectation of silverware every single season. But they've got the likes of Remy Simpson, Princess Abini, Mackenzie Hawksby, Courtney Vine. They're complemented now by the inclusion of experienced Chilean international, Maria Jose Rojas, and New Zealander Paige Satchel. Satchel showed huge promise flying down the wing for Canberra last season. So the Sky Blues look to have plenty of force in attack. Consistency will be the key, but there is bucket loads of talent there. At the back, Nat Tobin takes on the captain's armband, and the addition of talented youngster Jessica Nash, I think, is a great shout. She showed a heap of talent last season for Canberra, and I think she's one of our star defenders for the future as we look to really cement those centre-back spots in the national team. Ali Green, of course, back in Sky Blue. She was solid at the back last season, as well as adding a corker of a goal. So it's really an important part of keeping a back line up to the standards that they had in 2021. They were the stingiest defence in the league, conceding only 11 goals all regular season. This season will hopefully see Jada Wyman put her hand up for a permanent spot in the senior Matildas roster. That position, I feel, has been in a state of flux with Lydia Williams having an injury-interrupted season. That left the door open for Tegan Micah to step up, which she, of course, did with aplomb. So the way I see it, Jada has the opportunity to be the next cab off the rank and a call-up to the squad for matches against Brazil. That was a positive sign that she is 100% in the frame, and a strong club season is only going to enhance those prospects. It's a chance to shine, of course, in front of the eagle-eyed national team coach for a period of time at least. Remy, too, has been given a call-up for the Matildas recently, seeing a few minutes against Brazil. She's up against it to challenge, of course, the likes of Sams and the Caitlins and so on, who are getting top-level football week in, week out in a number of competitions, but Remy now has the overseas experience to build on, and starring in the domestic competition in Australia, it's no doubt her intention, but I think it's also crucial on a path to a regular spot in the national team ahead of 2023. So when last season finished with Sydney FC lifting the Premier's plate before falling to Melbourne Victory in a last-gasp loss in the grand final, you could almost feel the Sky Blues plotting revenge before the tears were dry. So I think this side will be expecting another grand final appearance. I think they'd have to be the hot tip for the Premier's plate once more. They've got a draw that sees them stay in New South Wales for the first seven games, and Sydney FC only face Canberra, Melbourne Victory and Adelaide once in the regular season due to the various reasons that we still don't have a full home and away season. However, for Sydney FC, you can only play what's in front of you, and the pass mark for them is finals football. However, to call this season a success on paper, they must be challenging for the title. I can't wait to see what these players produce on the park. With so much to play for ahead of that World Cup on home soil in 23, and at least for the early part of the season, the head coach will be in town and in the stands. There's no better time to impress. I'm really looking forward to covering the league again this season, both with ESPN FC and on radio with SEN 1170. So see you all at a match very soon.